It's Sunday morning, time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host, and I'm calling you from what I think has to be the coldest place in America this morning. Remember how we used to watch John Coleman? I guess we're dating ourselves. On the weather, and he would always say the coldest place in America this morning, because it would make us feel better in Chicago, was always International Falls, Minnesota, or would be out in West Yellowstone in Wyoming. Well, this morning I'm calling you from a location. I'm on location instead of in the studio. It is 29 below zero. That's at least what my thermometer at both the hotel and my car says as we are attempting to go and hunt ducks. So for those of you who thought for a long time that I'm off my rocker, this confirms it. The only day that I've ever been out when it was colder than this was 38 below zero on the Bighorn River some 15 years ago on one of the epic days that I've ever known in the outdoors. So we're only 9 degrees shy of that, and I'm sure that when the sun finally comes up out here, it'll be every bit as epic, but 29 below. So if you're feeling as cold in Chicago, come and join me this morning, and we'll see what real cold is like. I want to start off with someplace that's not cold at all, and that is Cabo, Mexico. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the changes that have taken place in Cabo, from the experiences I've had, and also maybe a little bit of history, which is ties back to the Great Outdoors Show and WGN Radio. So I had the pleasure recently of going to Cabo for the purposes of fishing, something, as you know, I like to do, and certainly this time of the year, any excuse to get out of Chicago is a good one. So I had last been to Cabo 15 years ago. What I can tell you, and many of you listening, I know, have been to Cabo, but if you haven't been to Cabo San Lucas, then let me give you a bit of a picture, and I'm going to actually go back quite a ways. In 1947 or 48, Bill Cullerton, who was the longtime host of the Great Outdoors Show here on WGN Radio, took a boat from Mazatlan over to what is today Cabo San Lucas, and he had on the boat with him John Wayne and Bing Crosby. And they were fishing. And this was in the late 40s. And the only way to get to Cabo, there were no roads. The only way to get there was by boat from the mainland. And Bill Cullerton described pulling into what is now the iconic harbor beach at Cabo with the arches and the hole and the rock and the picture that's known throughout the world. And he described it this way to me. Charlie, he said, we pulled in after having crossed for 2 days from Mazatlan across the Sea of Cortez, and we come into Cabo, and the only thing there was a little wooden structure towards what now is the harbor in Cabo on the beach. And he said that was it. There was nothing else there. And we sat on this bar, and he said the garbage worked this way. You threw your beer cans in the ocean, and the tide took them out to sea. There was no garbage pickup. And there weren't, he said, and I'm trying to remember the best I can, but said there weren't 100 people in Cabo. And we caught marlin on the beach, and we caught sailfish on the beach, and we caught roosterfish on the beach. He said you didn't even have to go out, and the fish were right there on the beach. That's in the late 40s. So I then went to Cabo for the first time in the late 90s, and Cabo obviously looked a lot different. Temperature was still the same. Gorgeous. So flash forward to now, I haven't been to Cabo in over 15 years, and first thing that strikes you is it's a brand new airport. The old airport is gone. They have a new world-class airport with direct flights going literally all over America and parts of Central America. And when you drive into Cabo, it's a brand new four-lane road, and I can't even begin to tell you how many tens of thousands of hotel rooms they have added in the Cabo San Lucas, Cabo San Jose area over the past 15 years. It's as though you went to sleep and you woke up and you've been transplanted to another planet. So again, my purpose in going was to go fishing. So I had a charter boat that was going to, and a captain that had been recommended to take me fishing. And of course, as luck would have it, it was really rough in the time I was in Cabo. And the swells in the sea were, 4 to 6 feet, which makes it really tough. But the other thing that struck me as we left the harbor was there were probably 100 to 120 boats. I know I counted 105, so at least 120 boats moving out to sea all at the same time as day breaks in the little harbor in Cabo. That's 120-plus boats all going, trying to catch a marlin or trying to catch a dolphin or trying to catch rooster fish. That's a lot of boats. And they're going every day, and they're going twice a day. There's morning fishing, and there's afternoon fishing, and they're doing this for months on end. The economic impact of fishing, sport fishing in Cabo, is in the tens of millions of dollars. So we think of tourism as a huge part of the business in Mexico. Well, fishing is a big part of the business. And obviously the success rate of people going fishing is not very good. Certainly not the success rate that Bill Cullerton had when he stood on the beach and caught a marlin in Cabo. You couldn't do that today if you stood there 24 hours a day the entire year. So we went out to sea, and it was really rough. And as happens infrequently in Cabo, it also was raining. So the combination of high seas and rain made for at least the first morning of fishing made for an experience that you would rather just go, let's go in, please. But in this high sea, we were able to see some birds working, and we broke off from this mass of boats. And, of course, the radio is just going constantly with captains all talking to each other in Spanish about what they're doing. And there's nothing tranquil about it. You can't leave Cabo behind, the massive humanity that is Cabo. It has just simply gone out to the ocean now as well. And so we were able, though, to spot with some binoculars some fish that were some birds that were circling about 3 miles north up the Pacific coastline from where this group of boats were. And we took off, and, of course, other boats followed us. And pretty soon we had our own armada of about 25 boats moving north. And as we were going north at pretty good speed trying to catch these birds, and when the birds circle over the water, they're circling bait fish. And the reason bait fish are coming to the surface, of course, is because marlin are underneath them, forcing them up. And as we were moving north at a pretty high speed, all of a sudden, the captain threw the boat into neutral and then spun it hard to starboard. And I looked, and I could see the fin of marlin rolling in the waves. And when I come back, I'll tell you more about what happened, and then also move you on to Washington and some things that are taking place there as well. So I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host, on the Great Outdoors Show, which is entering its 47th year on WGN Radio, and my 17th year as the host. So before we took a break, I was talking to you a little bit about just about to put a marlin on the line in Cabo. And for those of you joining me, I'm reporting this morning from 29 below zero, Idaho. But last week, I was in 85-degree Cabo. And so the sea was rough, and we saw fins of marlin on the surface, and the captain threw the boat hard to starboard and then reversed gears and backed down. And of course the water immediately from the ocean came in over the transom, so that didn't work. So then he put it back into forward, and we grabbed rods, and they were teasers. They did not have hooks on them. They were teasers because our marlin rods, of course, are big heavy rods and not easy to cast. So we were casting these teaser fly rods in the direction of the marlin and then running our bigger rods into the water next to them. And there were three marlin on the surface. You could see their not only their long sword-like nose, but then their fins on top of the surface. And we cast about 10-inch bait fish. In front of them, nothing. And we tried this for about 20 minutes, staying with the three marlin that were right on the surface. The birds are overhead. There's bait in the water. And we could not get the marlin to take. They simply wouldn't do it. despite every technique that we knew. And they weren't 25 feet from the boat. And they weren't big marlin. They were maybe 200-pound marlin or so, 250. But they certainly would have been a great fight if we'd been able to catch them. We tried this for 20 minutes. No luck at all. And then they went off down into the depths, and we never saw them again until all of a sudden we had a tug on the end of one of our rods that was fixed off the stern, and there was a marlin on that one. And we set the hook, and it was the briefest fight with a marlin you can ever have. It lasted about 20 seconds. The hook was set. We climbed into the chair to fight the marlin. We pulled on the rod, and the marlin was gone. And what I can only envision happened is that the line got wrapped on the tail of the marlin, which sometimes happens, allows it to go slack, and it can spit the lure out of its mouth. And that's what I think happened, because the metal leader was still intact. So those were the only marlin that I saw while I was in Cabo, and I did not boat one. But I certainly have a new appreciation for the development of tourism in the Baja Peninsula of Mexico. If you haven't been there in a while, you wouldn't believe what is taking place. And I bet if you go in 10 years from now, what looks like now is huge development will be just an absolute, just a miniature of what is coming. There's so much development taking place in the Cabo Peninsula. It's remarkable. So moving from the warmth of Cabo, I will go to the cold chill for a moment of Washington, D.C. And we obviously have a new Congress in session. Some things don't seem to change, and one of them is really unbelievable that with everything we have to do in America, the House of Representatives has passed a public lands for transfer provision, which, of course, is being adamantly opposed by conservation groups and sportsmen across the country. One of the things that the new Secretary of Interior has pledged is that he is not at all in favor of the transfer of federal lands to state ownership. President-elect Trump has pretty much said the same thing, that he doesn't think it's a good idea. So that may be the only roadblock between a House and a Senate that just seems determined to have federal lands go back to state ownership. Not go back, they never were in state ownership. And as an individual who's traveled extensively around the West, where most of our public lands are held, I can tell you my strong feeling and conviction is that the states are ill-equipped to manage the scope of federal lands that we have in the American West, and that turning over federal lands to the states, whether it be in Illinois, which we only have a few, Shawnee National Forest and Madewin Tallgrass Prairie, or up in Wisconsin where there's quite a bit of land, or Minnesota, or out west where there's lots, turning it over to the states is not going to solve any of the problems. In fact, it'll only exacerbate them. Think of Illinois for a moment. If the federal government said, you know, we think you ought to own the Suwannee National Forest, and we think you ought to own the Madewin Tallgrass Prairie. You go ahead and have them as a state. You run them. You do whatever you want. Ultimately, if you don't think they're worthwhile, you can go ahead and sell the land. Can you imagine in Illinois what it would look like with our state as broken as it is and as corrupt as it is, if we suddenly had the responsibility of managing these lands or the opportunity, in fact, to sell them? It would be a disaster. And it's no different in other states. People seem to think it is a great idea. Bring it closer to local control and you'll get better management. And all that's true. You get better management with local control. But there are not the financial resources to manage these lands. And so the House of Representatives has once again moved to try to basically open the doors. The 115th Congress, on its very first day on Tuesday, capped it away with a vote that would give away Americans' public lands and waters, recalculating the costs of public lands transfers and easing current restrictions on shifting their oversight to individual states or private interests. The vote, of course, was largely along party lines, and I say that without being partisan in any way. It's a Republican effort to reenact the sagebrush rebellion of the Reagan administration, and there's nothing wrong with having a full-throated discussion as to how we manage our public lands better. And as you know, you've been listening to the show for a while, this is a subject I am keenly aware of and believe that we at WGN and across the country can have an impact on improving land management of our public lands, because after all, these are our lands. But having them go and be shifted back to the states so that they can manage them without any financial resources from the federal government to do so, or frankly, without the expertise to do it, is just a short-sighted, it's a short-sighted way of addressing what is a huge management issue for the federal government. So at least we know for right now, the president-elect says he's not interested in doing this. But on the first day that Congress is back, they made it a priority. This is what they want to do. So anyway, that's what I can tell you. What's happening in Washington with our public lands. So from Mexico last week to 29 below in Idaho this morning, I don't can't even imagine how we're going to try to shoot a goose or a duck, but we'll try. I'll be back in Chicago next Sunday morning where I'm sure it'll be warmer. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.